This podcast is brought to you by VC Finance Group.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
FNR Football Nation Radio. We are your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. Welcome to the program. Plenty of Nations League action to get through, of course. A famous result this morning, England against Spain. We'll have the fallout from that match and plenty more to come shortly. A few big matches to preview as well, still to come in this round. France and Germany do battle amongst a few other significant matches. So that and plenty more to come. Adriano Del Monte, Rick D'Andrea here with you as always for the next 2 hours talking all things international football. We are, of course, closing in on the return of club action, Champions League action next week as well. So a nice busy time for all football fans right around the world. We are streaming live on Facebook as we do this first hour every day. At FNR underscore radio is where you can find us on Twitter. Rick, a big night of action, a famous win for the Three Lions. Despite
being
dominated statistically, they come away with a famous win. We'll bring you those reasons why very shortly. But some news doing the rounds before we get into those matches from
and
overnight.
Thank you very much, Adrian, and good afternoon to all our audiences across all our FNR platforms. And we'll start with that big result overnight here in Australia. And England has kept its UEFA Nations League semi-final hopes alive after defeating Spain 3-2 in Seville. The Three Lions claimed a convincing 3-0 lead with thanks to Raheem Sterling's getting a double either side of a Marcus Rashford goal before Paco Alcacer and Sergio Ramos scored for La Furia Roja. It was England's first win in Spain since 1987, maybe when this guy may have been born to my left.
Not even, Rick.
Not even. I was certainly around then, but not you. Switzerland, that's the other big result of the morning, has moved to the top of Group 2 with a 2-1 away win over Iceland. Goals from Hans Sedovic and Michael Lang were enough to cancel Finn Bogason's late strike, condemning Iceland to relegation, the second team. Bosnia and Herzegovina have qualified for League A after defeating Northern Ireland 2-0 thanks to an Edin Dzeko brace, while Finland assured themselves of a spot in Group B after defeating Greece 2-0. Into more club news now, Adrian, and Manchester United are not, and I repeat, are not for sale here. This is after a report started to emerge that a Saudi prince, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, was interested in purchasing the Red Devils. Tottenham chairman Daniel Levy has said that the increased cost of the club's new stadium will not affect their transfer policy. In some other news, Patrick Cutrone, the Italian international, has signed a contract extension with AC Milan until 2023. And finally, on the back of yesterday's report that we discussed in relation to PSG and Red Star Belgrade, Marco Verratti, the defensive midfielder there for PSG, he said that the players actually cannot believe the allegations that are being levelled across Red Star Belgrade, and of course that they do involve his club and that particular Champions League match. Adrian, back to you.
Thanks for that, Rick. Obviously, that's a touchy subject, that one. If you missed the show yesterday, of course, we brought you the reports that there have been allegations directed towards PSG and Crvena Zvezda. Reportedly, an informant has tipped off UEFA, suggesting that there was some discussions behind the scenes about this match ending in a 5-goal deficit with PSG winning 6-1 in the end. So some details emerging there, again, against the allegedly corrupt Crvena Zvezda president. So we don't want to discuss that in too much more depth, but that's a story if you missed that yesterday. Verratti coming out and saying that Red Star Belgrade, that match, that they knew nothing of it. So, and you wouldn't expect anything else at this point.
Absolutely,
so
correct.
We will keep you posted with what happens there. But, of course, all the action on the pitch overnight, dominating headlines, as you discussed off the top, and there's only one place to start, and it is with that famous result by England. Some incredible statistics to emerge from what was an incredible night. 3-0 England led at the break. Now, obviously a lot of the stats that have come out concerning Spain and their failure to have conceded this many goals or lost in a long time, but the last time that Spain were down by 3 goals at the break, I couldn't tell you when. It would be
a very, very long time,
if ever, particularly on home soil in a competitive fixture. But some of the statistics to emerge. So obviously the first time that they've conceded three for about 5 years, the first time in 27 games that they've lost. They were unbeaten in 27 coming in. And in fact, their last defeat of any kind wasn't since the Euro 2016, round of 16, when they were eliminated by Italy by 2-0. So a long time there. First time in 15 years they've lost a home competitive fixture. So a few long-term home competitive results and stretches coming to an end. Spain now, Italy were a couple of years ago, stretching over well over a decade. But the big one for me is the one against England. It's their first defeat against the Three Lions in 31 years, as you touched on, since 87 at home. So an incredible night for England. And this was the same Spanish side, Rick, that 4 weeks ago destroyed Croatia by 6-0. A famous, famous win.
How things can change in this only, what, a month's time. We also remember that Spain had gone to Wembley and won 2-1 against the same Three Lions outfit, or more or less the same sort of lineup that Gareth Southgate put out for this game. But you're right, how things can change. And obviously we have to give a lot of credit to Gareth Southgate and those tactics that he employed. It's one thing that we've said over and over here on FNR Football Nation Radio over the last few months, saying that Gareth Southgate hasn't really been able to get a tactical setup going, getting it right. It's been more player-led and quality-led rather than actual tactical-led. I think the exact opposite happened in this match. And why I say that is because Gareth Southgate obviously came in with a very strong plan to try and catch a lot of the Spanish midfield and a lot of that defence out with their speed and with that transition one-touch play. Now, even if you have the quality of players, you need to have the tactics to actually be able to execute it and to get it implemented on the park. And how did two of those three goals happen? Exactly from that sort of direction led by Gareth Southgate. So, yes, congratulations, Gareth Southgate, on such a mighty fine win.
A fine win. Sterling with a double, ending a three-year goal drought for his national team. Rashford with a goal as well. And the same Rashford who 3 days ago, he was just so poor and lacked confidence in front of goal against Croatia in that match. Had two or three clear-cut chances. He wouldn't have scored if the net was empty. He really, really struggled in that match. Mm. So it was a great reward for both those two players, particularly Sterling, of course, who's dominated at club level, been very solid for City at club level, and finally scores a double. His first strike was a great one in the top left corner. Yeah. That was just after the quarter of an hour mark. So a great start, as I said, 3-0 within 40 minutes, 3-0 at the break. And then Spain, as you said, pegged their way back into Paco scoring again. Paco Alcacer just cannot stop scoring. And Sergio Ramos, in the 97th, 98th minute, netting home what was a consolation with the last touch of the match. But again, it was that hot start. And if you looked at the stats of this match, 70-30 possession, 27-5 shots. It was just a clinical England display. They got in behind three times and they scored, and that was the difference. And again, now what it does to this group, the UEFA Nations League, is such that now this group is wide open. Wide open, because Croatia, who are on 1 point without a goal, all of a sudden as a result of this, well, they're back in it. At the same time, they seriously risk being relegated. But should Croatia just go on and win their last two matches, they win the group.
They just have to do it very tough, though. That's the only way they get through.
But I understand, but had Spain won this, it's all over. So all of a sudden, the complexity and dynamic of this group has changed. Croatian players will go back home for another month. They'll go back to their respective clubs. It just opens up the group once again. England, of course, now back in, well, not the box seat, but they're certainly in a nice position if they would like to advance. But certainly, it's all to play for still in Group 4 of League A. After yesterday, I said that England had no chance of winning this game. And I'm still very surprised that they did. But again, if you watch the game closely, they were just too clinical in front of goal.
You're right. Simple as that. They got the tactics right. Too clinical in front of goal. And another thing that probably was a good thing, it wasn't reliant on Harry Kane to actually score those goals. There was obviously, in the case of both Rashford and Sterling, there were two other outlets that had actually put in the goals into the back of the net. But just quickly, just touching on Rashford, yes, he was very poor against Croatia. Absolutely no doubt. But he's getting into those pockets of space and he's creating those half chances. In this case, he's actually able to finish them off. Mm. But he's getting into the right area, and with a little bit more confidence, he will actually find the back of the net. We saw that he did score twice in the last month in the opening two sort of matches that England did sort of go through. So all of a sudden, he's what, 3 from 4 or something along those sort of lines in terms of his international status. He actually might turn out to be the partner that someone like a Harry Kane does need going forward if he can just keep on scoring a couple more goals and getting into those little spaces and putting away his chances.
The boy can play. He can certainly play, but it's just about finding that consistency. And you're right, he did score against Spain at Wembley, and he scored against Switzerland in the friendly in their last round of international fixtures. So that's three goals in his last four games for England. He's building some nice form, there's no doubt about it.
If only he can be the consistency that he is at English national team level.
For United. Well, I guess the rest of them will be asking the same things. But look, in the end, they deserved the win.
And they did.
Credit to them. On paper, I feel that the Spanish side were by far superior, but the English, the same level of spirit that they showed the World Cup stood out here.
Yeah.
There was one comical moment, though, where Jordan Pickford was almost...
Well, this is the thing.
It could have ended in disaster.
Describe the moment, and then I'll ask you a follow-up question.
I can't recall the opponents, but he tried to beat the opponents.
He tried to get around Parkour Alcácer.
He tried to get around him and failed dismally, and I don't know how he didn't score, and I feel it should have been a penalty.
I was going to say, should it have been a yellow card or a red card
offence
and at least been shown the door? Because
red no, because it was a soft challenge, and of course UEFA, FIFA, World Football have tried to abolish that punishment red penalty goal rule. I feel a yellow would have been sufficient. I also feel a penalty was a certainty. He clearly held him back, so I suppose you could mount a case that maybe it could have been 3-3. Again, obviously, he scores a penalty. The complexity of the game may have changed early on, but regardless, certainly Spain there missing what I feel was a golden opportunity.
And had that actually gone in, we'd be having a very different discussion.
For sure.
Wouldn't be talking about the 1987 drought. We wouldn't be talking about England being in the UEFA Nations League and having a bit of a chance. And as Gianfranco has actually come through, penalty 100% and the game was different. That's exactly my thought.
For sure.
Penalty, yes. I would have gone as far as actually pulling out the old red pocketed card and saying, you know what, off you go, Jordan.
I wouldn't have been surprised, but again, I feel just based on the new rules, that's a yellow, that's a penalty every day of the week. So very unfortunate for Spain there. But again, Spain still are in the box seat here. They're in the box seat. So what they've done now, obviously, what works against them is that England have the better head-to-head. So when we look at the standings now, should they end up on the same points? And the way that happens is Spain-Croatia draw and England defeat Croatia. Actually, England win the group. So we need to keep that in mind. Because England scored more away goals in the head-to-head between Spain and England, England will finish ahead if level on points. So that's an interesting one. Spain beat Croatia, though, they win the group. And that is that. But a thrilling game. And Spain lose for the first time in a very long time. They're a talented outfit, very talented, and I still think that they will go on to win this group. But good on England, obviously, after that semi-final appearance at the World Cup. And a shaky start to life after the World Cup. Good on them for going and getting this result with a team that, well, is it their best side? A midfield of Barkley, Dyer and Winks? Probably not.
Probably not, but nonetheless, they've gotten the result. Another thing that sort of popped up after this match because of the result is there were a few people on Twitter in particular that I was actually seeing, and a couple of even English pundits that were sort of coming out and saying this. Is this England's best win since taking on Germany and
96?
Beating them 5-1 in 2001?
2001. Okay. Is it their best win? Well, we had this discussion the other day about a couple of other nations. Mm. Is it their best win? Well, hard to say is it their best win because they've just made a semi-final at a World Cup. Now, obviously, they didn't beat a Spain at the World Cup. So maybe in terms of the significance of the opposition and what it meant and the end of all of these records, but I think there's a difference between the best win and a more significant win. So for me, in short, no, because they've just made a semi-final of a World Cup. We know they haven't had too much success since then, but given the significance of defeating Spain...
In Spain,
arguably a top three nation in world football despite their performance at the World Cup. Yeah, that's right up there.
Yeah. I mean, I can see where they were coming from because, as was the case, you know, with the Berlin match.
That was in Germany.
In Germany against one of the best teams going around at that time.
Sure.
And, of course, 5-1 Michael Owen with that stunning hat-trick that I recall very, very well.
Well, again, certainly one of the best. No need to debate. They're all wonderful wins for the Three Lions, and they'll be thrilled with that. Again, had they not won this game, as many had predicted, well, they would have been facing relegation from this group. But now, quite incredibly, despite Croatia having fate in their own hands, they win two games, they win the group. But Croatia, now the World Cup finalists, favoured to go down.
how things can change within 24
Incredible
hours.
Incredible to think that Germany and Croatia could be two nations in League B next time out. That is
very strange. That is very strange. Very strange.
And also keep in mind, if you are relegated from your group, very strong chance you aren't seeded for Euro qualification, which would guarantee some group of deaths.
Yeah. Well, Croatia would be the perfect example. They haven't scored. They've conceded six. How can they actually be one of the 10 nations seeded out of these 12 teams that are in League A? They could not be.
Well, the four teams that are likely to be relegated, four nations rather, that are likely to be relegated, off the top of my head, Germany, Croatia, Iceland, who we'll get to shortly, and Poland. Now, of those four nations, Poland are on 1 point. Iceland have done nothing. Croatia have got 1 point, and Germany have done, or they've also got 1 point as well. So it's in the balance there. But Croatia without a goal, certainly
Germany without a goal.
Germany without a goal, it's not going to help. So we will see how they go, but England win it 3-2. The other game in League A, Iceland, Switzerland. Now, Iceland did finally get their first goal, but it wasn't enough. They lose 2-1 at home to Switzerland. They are all but gone. Is it mathematical? Yes, it is.
Yeah, they're gone.
So they become the second League A side to be relegated. Switzerland go joint top with Belgium, but Belgium, of course, have that match in hand. One goal scored for Iceland, 11 conceded. Don't want to say I told you so, Rick, but we...
You can, go on.
Well, I told you so, Rick, because this was coming. This was absolutely coming. Iceland off the back of a disappointing World Cup, drawn into a group with the two very strong, solid nations, and Belgium playing a level of football at the moment which you couldn't compare to too many others.
No.
And Switzerland obviously beat them by six their first time out. It was always going to be tough, but that's the case in League A, and Iceland now relegated.
They might be relegated, but Iceland actually had the better chance to score in the first half. It was almost as if Vladimir Petkovic, the Swiss coach, had gone out and said, guys, don't go out there. Don't go out there and try and score as many as you did last time you played Iceland. Just defend a little bit, sit a little bit deeper, and absorb a little bit more pressure. And had it been for Nvogel, the debutant goalkeeper for Switzerland, Skelfi Sigurdsson should have actually scored one in the opening 15 minutes. So all of a sudden, the complexity of the match would have changed. The complexity of the group may not have changed too much, but Iceland would have certainly felt themselves they had a better chance of getting on the score sheet and maybe somehow pegging back some of those six that they needed to.
No doubt. It was a strange game because Switzerland, of course, coming off that 6-0 win. And we discussed this yesterday. How hard is it for them to obviously go on and repeat? Mm. But at the same time for Iceland, how do you overturn that deficit in 4 weeks? Very, very,
very
difficult.
Hard.
Now, Iceland certainly came to play because they had nothing to lose. And we know that. But 0-0 at halftime, didn't take their chances. A quick-fire double in the first 20 minutes of the second half. Seferovic and Lang scoring for Switzerland. And that was that. However, Finn Borgeson stepped up and scored what was the goal of the day. Stunning, stunning effort. Check that one out if you haven't. And from that moment, 9 minutes from time, it was that man Sigurdsson again who had two or three golden opportunities. Iceland could have actually won the game. They really had chances late to go on and win. It was too little too late in the end. Switzerland get the points and it finishes 2-1. And as I said, they go level with Belgium on 6 points now. But of course, that 2-1 defeat that they suffered in Belgium a few days ago means that, well, unless Iceland spring a surprise in their next game.
Which is doubtful.
Well, it's in Belgium. Mm. It's not possible. But I did say that yesterday at England, so who knows. But Switzerland looking likely to remain a League A side but not go up. So Switzerland 2, Iceland 1, that's how it finished.
I wonder if pressure will now start to be mounted on Erik Hamrén, the coach of Iceland.
Yeah.
Considering what happened at the World Cup, considering what has happened in these three matches and obviously what may happen in the Belgium fourth match of the UEFA Nations League, I wonder if there will be a couple of questions starting to be asked of him and whether his tenure...
What do you think? I agree, but again, they're a small nation. They're a small nation with a small pool of talent.
But the expectations would have certainly risen considering what happened from Euro 2016 all the way through the World Cup qualifying, making the World Cup, and then they've sort of plateaued and steeply dropped very, very quickly since that Russian edition of the tournament.
Questions, but I don't think any action. I still think they're in an okay... This is Iceland, Rick.
A decade ago,
they would have been a League D side.
No, I understand.
They've come on in leaps and bounds, and they're still playing okay football. And the fact that we're saying that we're disappointed that they've gone down to Belgium and Switzerland. These are two serious nations. It's a fine story, a fine performance, and I really believe they'll go to League B and they'll bounce back upon the next time of asking. So a great achievement by this side, Iceland, and they lose. They are relegated, the second side now relegated with Poland, but they'll be back. No issues at all. Gianfranco's come through again. Boys, you are doing a good job. Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you. Much appreciated. Ivan. Good afternoon to you, Ivan. Some things never change in Greece. UEFA and FIFA come in to clean up everything. Next thing you know, the bribing and fixing of matches are started again. Well, in Greece, any news on what the latest is there?
No, I think it's because of the whole Belgium saga, there are a few teams that are sort of in that sort of Eastern European bracket. And yes, I'm classifying Greece as part of Eastern European, even though it is Southern. But I think there's Serbia, there's Macedonia, there's a few other teams and a few other clubs that are involved. But let's just hope that they rectify this match fixing saga very, very quickly, no matter which nation and which club is involved.
Geography with Rick D'Andrea on a Tuesday afternoon.
Anytime, guys, anytime.
FNR Football Nation Radio. League B, Rick. Bosnia 2, Northern Ireland 0. Edin Džeko scores his 300th career goal in the win. He scored a double either side of the break. And Bosnia, they're playing some good football. They're 3-3, and they are all but promoted to League A. So there you go, a surprise going up out of that group, perhaps. Obviously, Northern Ireland were a side who were in a playoff for the World Cup. They missed out going down to Switzerland, 1-0 on aggregate. Austria, of course, a very solid nation as well. And Austria mathematically can still get up, but they will need to win both their games and obviously take care of Bosnia. So Bosnia in pole position.
It's very unlikely that you would think that they should actually get through Austria because they did lose to Bosnia, and so obviously head-to-head comes in before goal difference and anything else. So I'm going to go as far as saying Bosnia are through, definitely. But yeah, you're right. Considering the form that Austria did have leading up to that World Cup, we were talking about them being on a 6-7 match unbeaten streak.
They beat Germany.
And they beat Germany 2-0. Right. I think it was in Austria at the time, ahead of the World Cup. So they already had taken care of some good teams. I think they even also beat Brazil, if I'm not mistaken, or they'd played Brazil and somehow managed to get a draw. So all of a sudden, you thought the Red and Whites, led by Daniel Alaba, might have actually done something a little bit more in the UEFA Nations League, but they really haven't shown up. And all credit to Bosnia, 3-3. They know where their target man is, and we keep talking about it over and over again. Edin Džeko knows where the goals are, and his red-hot start to the season just keeps on continuing. Yep. That was his 54th and 55th goal for Bosnia, so he keeps on streaking ahead in the all-time race there in terms of goal scorers. But Northern Ireland as well, gone.
Yeah, Northern Ireland gone. Austria's form has been stunning. They've won 9 out of their last 11, and the two defeats, they actually lost to Brazil 3-0 on the eve of the World Cup, which is okay. And they lost to Bosnia this game 1-0, which was the first of this Nations League group for them, which was late on Džeko scoring. So Džeko's hot form continues. But you are right, in the lead-up to the World Cup, they took care of Russia, who obviously were stunning at the World Cup. They took care of Germany by 2-1. And they even beat Uruguay, Slovenia in the lead-up to that as well. And Sweden, off the back of the World Cup, very solid nation as well. So Austria in good touch, mathematically can still make it, but need everything to go their way in order to do that. So Bosnia defeat Northern Ireland by 2-0. And Northern Ireland now, they're also, again, not mathematically gone, but very likely gone.
Likely, and I'm going to go as far as saying they're gone.
Well, they'll have to beat Austria, then hope Bosnia beat Austria. But again, with Bosnia already through, that will be that. League C, some interesting results. Finland, for me, the surprise of League C. They are now, I believe, 4-4 without a goal conceded, Rick. 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, and 2-0 this morning against Greece. Finland are through. They're promoted to League B.
Yes, congratulations there to the Blue and Whites. No, I wouldn't have thought they would have been the team to actually get through out of this league. I actually thought that Hungary would have been the one, just based on a few players that they actually do have and the talent at their disposal. But Finland, you're right. Perfect start, perfect record. What more can you really ask for? Haven't conceded a goal. Maybe they were probably one of those teams that they felt were too strong to be in Group C. So the other one that we've always touched on is Serbia. Maybe they were just that little bit too strong for Group C. So maybe Group B or League B is where they should be. But absolutely, from next season onwards, you see what they can actually do and whether they can replicate these sort of results.
But Finland, Rick, Serbia, I mean, they were at the World Cup. Finland are a side that haven't really had much international exposure recently. It's a fine performance, and they take care of Greece. The other game in the group, Hungary, very poor. 3-3 with Estonia. Estonia pick up their first ever points in the UEFA Nations League. Estonia are a side who I had tipped to go down out of this group, and that they will now. They will certainly go down because, of course, Hungary. Well, they still have to play each other again, but they're on the verge of going down. Two games to go in this group. They will have to defeat Hungary in the next game. But that is that in that group. Finland are through. Greece are now safe, and Hungary and Estonia will battle it out for relegation in League D. The final two games. Well, we hope that San Marino could follow in the footsteps of Gibraltar. That they couldn't. They were one down within 4 minutes. 3-0, they go down to Luxembourg, while Belarus and Moldova draw 0-0. And Luxembourg, top of a group. See, this is, again, another element of this competition, Rick, which is a big tick for me. When have I ever said, or when have you ever said, Luxembourg top their group? Never.
I don't think I've ever said it.
It's
ever.
Wonderful. It is wonderful. So Luxembourg, top of the group, 10 goals, one conceded. Belarus, second. They have not conceded a goal just yet. So, unfortunately, two draws with Moldova, two 0-0 draws. Mm. But they've had two other wins against Luxembourg and obviously taking care of San Marino as well. And the next match in this group is Luxembourg against Belarus, the heavyweight clash of this group. So, looking forward to that. That is League D. So, plenty of football to come tomorrow. We'll preview the matches to come tomorrow later on in the program. One friendly of note overnight. Oh, well, let's start with the Australia one, then we'll get to the European. Okay. Australia defeat Kuwait.
4-0.
Well documented, 4-0. Good result, but obviously this was a friendly of its traditional kind. But two goals either side of the half, and Australia get a much-needed win to get this new era of Australian football up and running.
Absolutely, and when you sort of think about who Australia's last few goal scorers have really been, it's been Tim Cahill and it's been Mile Jedernak. It's at least positive to see that there were some new faces on the score sheet.
Sure.
Unfortunately, the very first goal that was scored post the Tim Cahill, Mile Jedernak era happened to be an own goal. So not a good result in that respect, but it was good obviously to see, you know, Giannis obviously get on the score sheet, Abu Nabil get on the score sheet. So it's very, very positive signs for Australia leading into obviously the AFC Asian Cup. And obviously, Graham Arnold's first match as the boss.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, the first match after the World Cup. So a good result there. Australia win 4-0 on the road. The other couple of friendlies overnight, Saudi Arabia and Iraq 1-1. Always interesting to watch the Asian powerhouse nations do battle in a friendly. Again, albeit a friendly. When you've got six, seven changes in the match, again, another element about the Nations League, you can't make those six substitutions where the second half you really lose a bit of vigour and inspiration to play. But 1-1, that finished. And Croatia 2, Jordan 1. So Croatia, the lone European nation in action in a friendly overnight. Solid, but different look Croatian outfit in for this one. Piazza getting a start, Rebic playing, Kramaric playing. So some familiar faces, but certainly all the big, big names, Modric, Rakitic and co, not there for this one. Perisic not even on the bench. So Croatia win by 2-1 over Jordan, and they will have, again, that's something for them to build on, but that's their first win since, of course, the win over England, which wasn't even a win because that was a drawn game and that was won later on. So that's actually their first win in 90 minutes, albeit a friendly against Jordan, since the 2-1 against Iceland. So that's their first win. They were winless in 7 in the lead-up to that in 90 minutes.
There you go.
And that's for the World Cup finals. So the team who risk relegation from their Nations League group, they pick up a win, but more friendly action to come tonight. Some of those fixtures include South Korea and Panama, Uzbekistan and Qatar. Qatar, of course, with that 4-3 win over Ecuador in a friendly a couple of days ago. And maybe the future heavyweights of football, as we discussed yesterday,
maybe.
China, they take on Syria. That will be a thrilling match. Again, of course, the well-documented story of Syria. So there, later tonight, plenty of other fixtures to come. Brazil-Argentina overnight as well, which I'm very much looking forward to. But full previews of them to come later in the show. The big one, of course, France-Germany, the UEFA Nations League, League A fixture tomorrow. Cannot wait for that one amongst all the other action there. The final day of Nations League action before we turn back to club football. Let's take it there now, Rick, because plenty of club news doing the rounds. We'll go through your top stories of the day before getting into some of the juicier content. But United not for sale. Now, this is obviously off the back of what's been happening recently.
Right.
And there's been talk about, well, should Woodward and the current owners and everyone move on and what's best for this club going forward. But not for sale, despite some Saudi interest.
Yeah, so I thought to myself, this sounds very, very interesting. I don't know why a Saudi prince would want to invest in Manchester United, considering that Manchester United is still one of the global powerhouses, despite not really performing this season on the field.
Well, that makes sense to me. They want to make some money.
Well, the Glazer family would want to make some money because the club's valued at around £3 billion. So you're talking about a fair bit of loose change if you are a Saudi prince that you would have to dispose of if you wanted to get a hold of the Red Devils.
Would you, regardless of this, the Saudi group or family here looking to show some interest, just given the uncertainties at the moment surrounding owners, the hierarchy, the managers, the players, is this really an investment that you feel, obviously they've got the brand power and they're worth more than any sports football club on the planet. That hasn't changed. But is it in a position at the moment where the business is running away that maybe you could just come in and take charge and hope that it were to continue? Or do you think these guys are seeing it as potentially a project to utilise, like City, Paris Saint-Germain? Because, again, Manchester United are a traditional club. They're
a traditional giant. You're right.
Man City were not. No. Paris Saint-Germain were not. So the business as it currently is, and sports clubs are businesses these days, it doesn't feel that it's going in the right direction. I would hate to see United turn into, this is where I was taking the conversation, a City or a Paris Saint-Germain and lose its traditional lure and value.
I think if one of these Saudi princes or anyone from the Middle East were to get involved, I think you're absolutely right. Man United would then become another PSG or another Man City. I personally don't like it in general. I'm a bit more of a purist when it comes to my football and the way things are done.
But especially that club.
But especially this club. You know, considering the success that they've had over the last quarter of a century, you wouldn't want to see this level of money come in and really awash this club and really, really take it to another level. If the Crown Prince is interested in buying a club, I hear Chelsea's up for sale. Didn't Robin Abramovich say that if you pay me about £5 billion, you can have my club? Wouldn't that be somewhere where maybe he might want to invest his coin? That's what I would have thought. I wouldn't have thought if Manchester United and the Glazer family are very happy with their investments and how things are tracking along and whatever KPIs that are in place, I don't think Manchester United might be the club for the Crown Prince. I reckon a little bit further down the road in London town might be where he should be having discussions with the former oil shipping magnate and possibly selling the Blues.
Seems a better fit. As I said, the point being for me, I wouldn't want to see a wonderfully, a historic club, a traditional club. I would not want to see that. And that's not even, I'm not a Manchester United fan, so that's just talking.
Well, you did wear a Manchester United shirt about a month or so ago, Adrian, on a show, but
that
nonetheless.
That was for the first time.
And that's the one behind us at the moment.
And against my will.
Yes.
No, but again, you can respect and obviously you admire what they've been able to achieve. And it's one of the most powerful brands in world football. I would hate to see that be the case. But again, money talks these days, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And unfortunately, you know, it always will in the footballing world. But some more stories have sort of come out involving Manchester United. And there's two that really have started to sort of pique my interest. The first one is David De Gea's contract extension, constantly been prolonging and prolonging and prolonging. But the second one that sort of started to emerge now is Romelu Lukaku. And that's the one I want to talk about today because I don't really know and I don't really understand this, but with the amount of money that Manchester United spent on the Belgian international, we know what his record is at international level. We know what his record is against sort of the teams from, say, about 7th to 20th in the English Premier League. Why is he now possibly up for sale or at least being shopped around to clubs all over Europe and the world?
Well, why, we can't answer that. He's an asset. He's one of the few assets that they actually have. So that would be my prediction, Rick. But again, where would he work? Where would his style of play work? Where's a suitable club? Obviously, he's still a player who, irrespective of whether you think he's a top-class player, world-class player, or just a mediocre player who scores lots of goals, whatever the case is, he's got some value about him. He's got the record at international level. He's also got the record at club level. Where would he fit? Where could you demand such money? I've questioned this about Pogba going forward. Pogba is an asset for United. They could still cash in on him. The project, as I've said, isn't really going in the right direction. I just see that these are assets that they can sell, use the money, reinvest, and start to build again. And that's where I feel they need to go, hence why I feel Lukaku is being shopped around. I did see comments he made the other day, though, about potentially joining his brother, Jordan Lukaku, in Italy. And he said, he left the door open. He said, maybe it's something that would be of interest. Regardless, the Serie A, La Liga, Bundesliga, Ligue 1, whatever the case is, I think that he'd need to stay at that level of United. Now, I don't think he has the quality to move to a Barca, a Real, a Bayern Munich, perhaps, just given where they're at the moment. But I don't think he has the quality to be a top, top, top player at a top club. I do feel, though, that he has something to offer at a Manchester United-type level club at the moment. So I'd say a second-tier side underneath those real heavyweights at the moment.
The problem is who could afford, firstly, his transfer fee. That was a very, very big
outside thing. Of England, not many. Not many. Outside of England, I can't think of too many.
And so then would Manchester United be willing to, like you sort of touched on at the start, would Manchester United be willing to cut their losses, maybe cash in on him for...
And sell to a rival?
And sell to a rival, maybe for somewhere around the 60. Surely they wouldn't. Surely they're not
no.
that sort of...
No. I wouldn't think so.
So all of a sudden, you are needing to find clubs who could potentially outlay the best part of, say, an £80 million pound transfer fee to sort of at least mitigate the 75 that was spent. And then you'd have to offer, you have to find a club that could obviously pay his wages. And he's not going to come cheap. He's one of the more highly paid players at Manchester United because of obviously what he has been able to do and what he was able to be transferred across to. So
where could he go? Where could he go hypothetically? Spain? Anywhere?
Spain, possibly.
For me, no. Not in Spain.
Well, the only place I could see him possibly going to there in Spain might be somewhere like an Atletico Madrid. Okay. He's not going to be one of the big two boys.
Okay.
Possibly PSG. And the reason I say he's PSG is because you've obviously got the link with Thomas Meunier.
Cavani would need to leave.
Though. Cavani would be the one to go. And we've discussed what Cavani and Neymar and Mbappe and their link-up partnership with the two.
Germany, for me, is the one that makes a bit of sense here. Bayern Munich, Lewandowski, future unclear. That makes a little bit of sense to me. They do need to reinforce somewhere. They've got an aging attack. They're going to need to bring some players in. They could get Lukaku on the cheap, and they could sell Lewandowski for a lot.
They could.
Bayern is one where I see potential there. And in Italy at the moment, I just don't think that there's the spending power to be able to afford his wages. So at Juventus, not possible. At AC Milan, well, not with Gonzalo Higuain on the books. At Inter Milan, well,
Icardi's there.
And
Perisic is scoring as well.
Nainggolan, they've just signed for big money. At Roma, well, maybe. And the reason I say maybe at Roma is because there are further reports now about Edin Dzeko, linked to Chelsea very strongly in January, said no, or whatever happened, in the end it fell through. He has spoken, though, saying that a move to the Premier League, it may be too late, but you never know. If Dzeko were to move back, Lukaku to Roma would actually make some sense. But again, even so, Roma don't want to be continually overhauling their squad. So I would prefer to see Roma keep Edin Dzeko. But should he move on, obviously Lukaku's a bit younger, could be a smart option.
Could be a smart option. But the problem is this would be breaking Roma's transfer record fee.
Again, I feel they could get him on the cheap. Even so, it would still break their transfer record fee. But I feel that he would be available slightly at a loss. I think United would be willing to take a loss, not a significant loss, but I don't think they're going to resell him for 85, whatever they bought him for.
Well,
I'm thinking 55, 60.
Still a big loss. Still a big loss in today's values.
Big loss, but more affordable for these clubs. But I do think Bayern Munich is the one.
And then what does that mean if, we are talking hypothetically, and what does that mean if Lukaku does go? Mm. What does that mean for Marcus Rashford? Does he become the natural number nine target man up top?
It depends who the manager is.
Okay, well, we have to talk with Jose Mourinho.
Well, he won't be, though. We know that. There's no way Jose Mourinho is the manager next season.
Well, we're not talking next season. We're talking about a potential January swap. So,
do you think Lukaku could leave in January?
Well, you've just touted it as possibly going in January.
I don't think January. I know the reporter may be indicating that. I don't think January, but I certainly think beyond this season, again, a new United, a new feel. I think they will part ways with Sanchez, Lukaku and Pogba. And those three all leave. That frees a lot of cash up, particularly in the form of wages. And sure, they'll bring in some money for fees. I think Sanchez will... he'll take a hit, his value, but they'll still get good money for him. And the same with Lukaku and Pogba, I'd imagine, will be the most expensive out of the three. But that will free them up in terms of wages and salary. So, yes, Rashford would be the main man without those players, but surely they're going to invest in someone of quality. And it could be an Edinson Cavani.
It could be. It'd be very interesting.
Again, we are hypothesising, but certainly all worth discussing. So very interesting there you raised that with Lukaku, of course, off the back of those United reports. And again, given the uncertainties off the field with that proud club. Stefan's come through. Orazio says hi.
Hi.
Hi to Orazio and everyone watching here in Australia and around the world. Tottenham, obviously some discussions there. Their club, new stadium. How close are we to this?
Well, it hasn't been revealed when the actual...
They were meant to move in last month.
Yeah, so it's still a little bit uncertain as to when the final days will actually be allowed, or the doors will be flung open and everybody will be allowed to sort of roam around and watch a game there. But what's interesting is, yeah, Daniel Levy has come out and started to say that, well, even though the club spent the best part of, what, $1 billion on this new stadium, they haven't been sort of saving their money and thus affecting their transfer policy, which was very interesting because over the summer, well, who did Tottenham buy? No one.
Zero.
So all of a sudden, there were a lot of people, and we were one of those, that were saying, well, if they haven't spent any or haven't spent any money in bringing players in, does that mean they've moved funds towards their stadium because obviously it hadn't been fully funded or there were a few other issues that they needed to rectify? It's very interesting that Daniel Levy's come out in the front foot and said, well, no, we've got the money separated for that. And when we are ready to invest, we will invest in the right player for our club.
I think they'll be okay, Tottenham. I do. I'm not sold on whether or not... Actually, I'm going to say no. They don't make the top four this season because I just think Arsenal have really improved their game. And I think Tottenham, once they move into the new stadium as well, it will be during this season.
It will.
But once that happens, it's not their natural home ground. They will take a hit slightly, and it will take some time to adapt. And we've already seen that now. They've, you know, their record in the Premier League has been a fine record so far. 6 wins from 8, a couple of defeats to Liverpool, and that disappointing one at Watford. But regardless, they've been playing some decent football. But it will take a hit once they move in and transition into that. They've obviously got Champions League commitments as well.
Well, that's what they did last time when they moved from their old stadium to obviously Wembley. They obviously found a good season, if not more.
Well, that was season before last, and they were in the Champions League particularly.
Woeful.
At Wembley, they were very poor. They were in that group, I recall, with Monaco and a couple of other sides, and they couldn't get it together. Mm. Monaco were very good that season. But, yeah, I think Tottenham will be there or thereabouts, and I think they're the clear fifth side in the Premier League this season. But I just think over the stretch, a lot of moving around, a lot of uncertainty. They'd hoped to be in their new stadium, coincidentally, by that Liverpool match, which was their first home loss of the season. Yeah, I think it'll just be, just given the consistency of City, Chelsea, Liverpool, and even Arsenal, I think they'll just be edged out for a top four berth, which won't be a bad thing,
no,
I think, going forward.
Not the worst thing, but if you obviously do factor in club revenue and you factor in Champions League revenue, it is slightly above a lot of what other leagues and what a lot of the competitions going around do offer you. So it might take a bit of a hit, but hopefully in the long run, it might actually build them to be a lot stronger.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I'm looking forward to how they fare and obviously playing in that new pitch. They do take on a rival this weekend in West Ham, which should
another London derby.
A very good watch, of course. West Ham, an interesting story this season. And Tottenham looking to make it 4 straight wins in the league, but more on the Premier League to come later in the week. We still need to touch on the games to come tomorrow morning in the UEFA Nations League. Of course, we haven't forgotten about that. One round of matches to go tomorrow morning, including France-Germany, which we'll have you covered with all the fallout and analysis right here tomorrow on Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio. But just some of the other stories doing the rounds. We'll go to Italy. We'll talk some transfer news quickly. Now, you mentioned Patrick Cutrone signed an extension with AC Milan, the young striker, to tie him to the club until 2023. Now, we've mentioned some of his stats recently. His goal-scoring record is as good as they've been. Rivals the likes of Lionel Messi, well clear of Cristiano Ronaldo at the same age, and this is at that age in time. So he's matched what these best players have done at that age. And so for Milan to tie him down until 2023, so 5 years from now, that's a fair agreement for a club who are slowly working themselves back to the top of Italian football.
It just shows the promise that the Rossoneri do see in him. It's similar to what we sort of said with Jadon Sancho signing his deal with Borussia Dortmund just before the international break. Similar sort of thing here. Patrick Cutrone, the sort of the stats that we've touched on previously. Had he actually been, I think, at a bigger club, maybe an English club, all of a sudden we'd be talking about him being the next starlet world football. You know, could he be the one to ride with the likes of Pulisic? At this stage, you would say Trent Alexander-Arnold and Kylian Mbappe as sort of the next generation of youngsters coming through and being sort of the three or four that people will look up to once the Messi-Ronaldo era sort of dies down and dies away. All of a sudden, he is in that mix in my eyes. I just want to see him particularly now play more consistent and more regular football at club level. And yes, he will have to play alongside Gonzalo Higuain, and he will at one stage need to probably beat the Argentine international to that spot should Gennaro Gattuso play a one man up top.
It's not bad for his development anyway. No. Still, what is he, 19 years of age, still plenty of time to go forward, but certainly one to watch. And look, while you say about the fact if he was playing in a different league, he may get more exposure, I think it's purely, he's just turned 20 actually, I think it's purely down to the fact actually, Rick, that, you know what, in the end, Milan haven't been in the Champions League, and what have Mbappe, Pulisic and Alexander-Arnold done?
That's right.
They've played. And played well. They've played well. They've performed well at that level. So I think that's the difference at the moment between where Cutrone is at as opposed to those other youngsters in the game. But, of course, the four of those players are all nominated for the Young Boy Award at the Ballon d'Or. So it just goes to show that they are all in the mix for emerging future superstars. We know in the case of Mbappe, he's already... One of the very, very best we've seen. So, Cutrone, 5 more years at the club. Another one at AC Milan, Bakayoko. So, I'm reading that they're about to send him back to Chelsea.
Bye-bye.
Not happy?
Not happy. Well, what's he really done this season?
Not much. But
he hasn't done much. He hasn't really fitted in. His style of play, I think, is being sort of eradicated out of the game. And on top of that, when you factor in that Frank Kessie is the one that is ahead of Bakayoko in terms of playing time and experience, and you've still got Lucas Bilha on the books, he's not having a very good time, let's just say, in Italy at the moment. And the reports are suggesting that he will be going back as early as January.
That's incredible. They're saying that there are defects in his game that they're not happy with. It is incredible for the player who really burst onto the scene in that year, the 16-17 season at Monaco, when every single Monaco player was incredible. And now all of a sudden just failed to find his feet at Chelsea and just a handful of appearances at AC Milan. And yeah, it hasn't been a good time for him there. And if that loan move is cancelled so early, it's a sad end. And where to next now?
Where I'd like to see him is I'd like to see him actually reunite with Geoffrey Condogbia at Valencia. Because the two of them together, when they worked together at Monaco, were this dynamic duo that could not be beaten. That's what ultimately led to Monaco doing very, very well a few seasons ago in the Champions League. So it'd be very, very nice to see at least the two of them partner up together, and maybe they can both be brought out and the very best can be seen again.
Maybe you'll get your wish, Rick.
Maybe. Fingers crossed.
Now, while he's one of the, I suppose, the failed stars, a flunking star in the top flight in Italy, one player who's undoubtedly playing as good as anyone is this superstar striker from Genoa, Piatek, who's been linked everywhere. He scored in every game, was 12 goals for a club, a goal for Poland against Portugal at the weekend, the first round of the Nations League this time around. He's playing great football. The likes of Juventus, Barcelona, Chelsea, Dortmund, all interested, and a January move reportedly was on the cards. A general director, though, Rick, has come out and said, no way, there is no chance that happens whatsoever. Forget about it. So I read that yesterday. I wake up today and the reports overnight out of Rome say that Roma are confident that they will agree a deal. This is in the Corriere della Sera in Italy, that they will agree a deal with him. But Genoa, of course, remain adamant, no deal will take place. One thing is for sure, he will have a long list of interested parties, and understandably so. Not too many players have scored in every game to kickstart a Serie A season. Well, he scored in all 8. It's been incredible. He scored in the Coppa Italia. He scored for his country. He's been phenomenal. Does he move in January? Because, again, keep in mind, this is a player who's made a €1.5 million move from the Polish top flight to play for Genoa, a mid-table team in Italy. Now, to be fair, Genoa so far, solid start. They've got a game in hand. They've played some solid sides, and they have a very busy schedule to come. And in actual fact, they have a busy schedule to come, but they've just sacked their coach. So they've got a new coach coming in. They've got 6 of the toughest games to come in the next 6 weeks. I'm not so sure that this hot goal-scoring streak continues. And once it stops, once the run halts, which will be in the next game, I believe, against Juventus, then what? Because if Genoa now are saying, no, we don't want to sell, which is completely fair enough because they have a jewel here who could lead them to big and better things, but the value all of a sudden, well, it's not going to flatten out, but it will just go down.
It might just plateau a little bit, to be honest.
It will certainly plateau, and the run is very difficult.
I just want to know, this Piatek saga is starting to remind me a little bit of N'Golo Kante and Osman Dembele. Now, if you remember back to those two players, they went from their clubs in, or in the case of Kante, Ligue 2 to Ligue 1, and then Ligue 1 obviously moving on to Leicester and then Chelsea, etc., etc. But in the case of Dembele, he went from Rennes to Dortmund for about 10 to 15, and then all of a sudden he got cashed in at 105. This Piatek saga's got that little bit of a similar sort of flavour and ilk to it for me at this stage. If the Godfather offer does come in, and it is too good to refuse, Perinetti and Preziosi, the sporting director and the president, have to sell.
Must.
You can't keep him on the books. No. Unfortunately for Genoa, you are known as a club that develops and moves on to a bigger team. You are not a club that can generically or really hold on to these sorts of players for 3, 4, 5 seasons and hope that they will take you, for instance, into a Champions League and maybe even to a knockout stage of one of the biggest tournaments in world football. So for me, Piatek, if that offer may be around the 60, 70, if it is that big, I don't know if it is, I'm only speculating here, you have to let him go.
No choice.
January, you have to cash in on him. You have to ride your luck and find the next big talent throughout that January transfer window.
Well, you'd have 70 million profit to deal with if you're selling for 70 because you bought him for nothing.
Correct.
Absolutely must cash in because, again, what more can a player... And this is the difficulty here, because what more can a player at that level with that club not playing in Europe do? It can't get much better than what he's done.
No.
And so I feel that these... While they're saying, no, he's ours, we're keeping him, these reports need to be considered by the club seriously. Absolutely. Because then how much more money is going to come to the table, really, for a player who hasn't done it at a higher level in Genoa?
Well, has he really done anything in the last couple of seasons beyond what he's done at the Grifo?
Not at this level, no.
So that's why I think if you are Preziosi, you have to, unfortunately, as much as you would love to keep him, I think you have to cash in for the betterment of the club going forward.
Fascinating running these mid-table clubs in any top-flight competition. Aware of the fact that, okay, imagine Genoa finishing the top four this season and made the Champions League. How they would get there would be off the back of him. There's no doubt about it. But then if he's been able to do that, he's certainly going to be on the radar of other top clubs, and other top clubs will come calling with a lot of money. Very hard to turn down a lot of money, but knowing that if you sell him, your Champions League aspirations are gone. They might as well not turn up.
Correct.
It's so intriguing to watch, and this is why you do see players come and go very quickly in football, and despite that not being what football is all about from a fan perspective, this is how these people make their money.
And when you think about, if you remember back even to the June, July, August transfer window, centre forwards were in high demand. Mm. And Bayern Munich couldn't find one. They obviously decided to keep Robert Lewandowski. Real Madrid decided to, let go of one of their superstars, but decided to keep Karim Benzema.
Yep.
All of a sudden, I mean, I'm only speculating from two clubs, all of a sudden, centre-forwards are going to be in very, very hot demand, and obviously one that is scoring, like in the case of Piatek, they're going to be worth a lot of money.
Absolutely. Well, a couple of attackers who have been scoring, again, talking about the Italian top flight, not so much in the top flight, but elsewhere. A teammate of, we've mentioned a couple of those star players, Ronaldo being one, but Cristiano Ronaldo, speaking of him, who's certainly one that's in some good form, his son in the lower levels of Juventus football, have you seen his record?
It's impressive, isn't it?
6 games, 8 assists and 14 goals, so we know where he's headed and we know what he's destined for, but more importantly, Ronaldo's teammate, his youngest teammate, Moise Keane, who's on the list of the Juventus squad, he has just become overnight the first born in the 2000s to score for the Italian under-21 side. Now, keep in mind, he also became the first born in the 2000s to score in Serie A and also in the Champions League. So maybe, again, we talk about Cutrone and young stars coming through. Moise Keane, an Italian international, or future Italian international, under-21 international, certainly now setting some records and doing some nice things there. So maybe another one to keep an eye on for Juve fans going forward.
Just needs to break into the first team. That's going to be the hardest issue. Obviously, Mario Mandzukic being the one that is relied upon to actually score the goals. And then obviously, with that attacking wingman and left forward and right forward that they have, good luck.
He would have been better to go on loan this season.
Yep.
I don't know why they bothered to keep him. I think that was a bit of a mistake. Spent last season on loan at Verona. Keeping him on the bench, not doing too much, I think that's a waste of a season. It's a bit like Daniele Rugani in defence. Fourth or fifth in the pecking order, you're never going to get a look in. So I think it could be a long season ahead for the young talent there. Some other transfer stories doing the rounds. We have talked about Bayern Munich and their search for new blood, new attackers up top. Cengiz Under of Roma being linked to Bayern Munich as a potential addition for the coming season. Of course, they are looking to fill the winger spots, which will be vacated by, well, Robben and or Ribery. We're not 100% sure yet which way it will be going, but Under targeted to the Bavarians.
Yeah, this is on the back of his agent, I think it was either last week or the week before, making comments that he has been in contact with the Bavarian Giants. There is strong interest there. Roma would be a little bit silly if they weren't at least to consider the offer that would be coming their way. You have to. On the back of the rise, it's similar to what Piatek, and we've sort of touched on with Piatek, on the back of that meteoric rise, on the back of all that success that Under was able to help Roma all the way through to the semi-final of the Champions League, you at least have to entertain an offer coming forward and possibly cash in on him.
No, I agree. Kluivert in the squad and these other players in the squad, as you mentioned, it's certainly one that should be considered, particularly for a sum of money that Bayern would toss up. Again, considering the fact that they will, again, if Robben and Ribery finish up, well, again, there's a lot of wage money being saved, which they will then be able to invest into these sales and purchases. So we'll see what happens with Cengiz Under, but has had a bright start to life in Rome, but I don't think that he's really near, I don't think he's reached full potential just yet.
No,
I think he's got a lot more to offer, and maybe Rome isn't the right place for him at this point. But he has had some brilliant moments, of course, a Champions League win, that 5-0 win over Pilsen, a couple of assists and a goal in that game. He was a fine performer for the Romans. A couple of other ones before we wrap up. The Ajax captain, Matthijs de Ligt, the Dutch international. Catalan Radio reporting that he is priority number one for Barcelona as early as January.
As he should be.
Obviously looking to reinforce their defensive stocks. They've had a strange campaign because they've been solid, but defensively, they've been leaking some goals. And again, Barcelona, similar to Atleti, I suppose, in Spain, just dominate possession, dominate the ball, but always defensively, you have been able to rely on what's back there, but not so much at the moment. Gerard Piqué, particularly, with a few shaky performances this season.
Well, Piqué's been shaky. Umtiti, we all are aware that he's actually hurt his knee, will be out at least until January, February next year. So all of a sudden, it's only pretty much Clement Lenglet as the only other recognised centre-back really in the team. So all of a sudden, you've got a few issues there in that position. And unless Valverde decides to go to a three-man defence, which I don't think he's going to, they need to go after somebody, a body, someone who they can see as being a hot prospect to build and going forward. And they probably want to bring in someone that can sort of work alongside the likes of Artur, who's 23, Dembele, as we know, is 20-21, Malcolm is 21-22, so they're still very young.
Yep.
You probably want to at least start to bring through the next generation of players together to build something going forward. And De Ligt has done everything right thus far at both club and at national team level.
So you like the approach of targeting the younger centre-back and not the experienced centre-back at this point?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think they've got the right balance. They've obviously got the 30-year-olds in Piqué. They've obviously got Umtiti, who's at 26-ish range.
Yep.
And they've obviously then, if they were to get De Ligt, they would then obviously have the trio across the board.
They need to get it together, Barcelona, because they haven't won in four. It's a very strange time for this talented outfit. But you are right, they're thin in defence for the first time in some time, and they're going to need some reinforcements. Could be as early as January. Now, we are nearing the end of this first hour, Rick, but before we wrap up, a quick word on Usain Bolt, please. Was trialling with Central Coast Mariners, has played two games with them in Australia, reported deal being discussed, but now Valletta in Malta, a club with Champions League aspirations, of course, Malta, a different path for the Maltese clubs to get in, a very long path into the Champions League, so very unlikely that they'll actually make the Champions League. But Valletta, Usain Bolt, and a two-year deal being discussed. What is going on and where does this end?
So originally, there were reports that had emerged from a few people on Twitter that were somehow starting to piece this story together, which they were saying it's a Champions League aspirant team, possibly someone who's linked to Puma, which would make the Bolt transition come across, and they played a cup final coming up fairly soon. One of the teams obviously being AC Milan. No, not going to happen. Zero chance that he will be playing in the Serie A next season, or at least towards the end of the season. But Valletta makes a little bit more sense. They're not obviously in a high or a strong enough league, so he'd be able to develop. He does have a lot of development still to go ahead. That's the first thing that needs to be put out there. They do obviously have a cup final to obviously contend with as well. So it might be similar to what he is getting here in Australia with the Central Coast Mariners and his trial. And yes, congratulations for scoring those two goals, but Usain Bolt, you have a very long way to go in your professional development football-wise.
More to come on Usain Bolt for sure tonight. Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio. 6 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. The last comment here from Alex. Only 7 minutes of extra time. This, of course, referencing the England-Spain game. I'm amazed the ref cut it so short. Another 10 minutes at least to give Spain a better chance. I always find that so funny. In games like this where a famous result is on the line, there always seems to be 15 minutes of
just
extra time.
Just that extra moment or two, isn't it?
Amazing stuff. All right, we're done on Facebook Live. Off to a quick break. Stay tuned for our second hour. Plenty more to come. France, Germany amongst the UEFA Nations League fixtures that we'll preview on the other side of this break. So stay tuned. This is Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Hello there and welcome to the second hour of Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. Adriano Del Monte, Rick D'Andrea back with you for this second hour. And if you're just listening to our ad break there, well, Rick, we are on the way.
We are.
We're on the way to the Logan. We're on the way to Logan Street, the Carlton Italian Festa this weekend, Sunday. We're broadcasting from 2 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time till 4 p.m. We've got a nice site there. Looking forward to it.
Next to Piazza Italia, so can't wait.
Looking forward to
talk about.
If you're in Melbourne, certainly come down because it will be a very busy day, as you said in the ad there, Rick. Lots on show, but we'll be there right in the thick of it from 2 till 4. And we'll be talking all things international football. We'll be amidst the weekend action, so there'll be lots of fresh action to talk about and everything else as well. So look forward to you coming down. Come say hello to all the team. We'll be there, a few prizes on offer, a few raffles on shows.
There will be a few little things that we are giving away, so do come down. And
plenty of action.
Maybe you might win something.
The Carlton Italian Festa this weekend, Logan Street. Carlton will be in the Piazza Italia. Look forward to seeing you there. Plenty to get through in this second hour. The lines are open if you'd like to give us a call. 99 44 99 99 at FNR_radio on Twitter. Rick, the headlines before we get into, again, what took place overnight and what's to come tomorrow.
Thank you very much and good afternoon to all the listeners. England have kept its UEFA Nations League semi-final hopes alive after defeating Spain 3-2 in Seville. The Three Lions claimed a convincing 3-0 lead with thanks to a Raheem Sterling double either side of a Marcus Rashford goal before Paco Alcacer and Sergio Ramos scored for La Furia Roja. It was England's first win in Spain since 1987. Switzerland have moved to the top of Group 2 with a 2-1 away win over Iceland. Goals from Hans Sedovic and Michael Lang were enough to cancel out Adam Fingbongson's late strike, condemning Iceland to relegation. Bosnia and Herzegovina have qualified for League A after defeating Northern Ireland 2-0 thanks to an Edin Dzeko brace, while Finland assured themselves of a spot in Group B after defeating Greece 2-0. Manchester United are not for sale. This is amid reports circulating that a Saudi prince, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, was keen to be interested in owning the Red Devils. As touched on at the end of our first hour, Tottenham chairman Daniel Levy has said the increased cost of the club's new stadium will not affect their transfer policy. Patrick Cutrone has signed a contract extension with AC Milan, tying him to the Rossoneri until 2023. And finally, Marco Verratti says his PSG players cannot believe the Red Star Belgrade match-fixing allegations, which may have involved his team being the opposition they played against. Adrian, that is a brief hit of news here. Back to you.
Thanks for that, Rick. Let's review the action from overnight. We'll recap those results in case you missed it in our first hour. Before we start to look ahead to what's to come tomorrow, of course, enormous fixture, France, Germany. Germany could very well be relegated from their group, but we'll discuss that in more detail shortly because there was a famous win overnight for the Three Lions, England winning 3-2 in Spain. 27 shots for Spain, 5 shots for England, 70-30% possession for the home side. Not enough. England lead 3-0 to break, win 3-2. Famous, as I said, first time in 27 games that Spain lose any match. Their last loss against Italy in the Euro 2016 finals. That was in the round of 16. It's Spain's first loss in 15 years at home in a competitive match and Spain's first loss in 31 years at home against England. Well done to Gareth Southgate and his men.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I sort of said in the first hour, he got his tactics spot on. He was able to nullify at least the tiki-taka style of football that Luis Enrique has really gotten this team playing, especially as they sort of work the ball out from defence. His transition work in particular with the players that he had at his disposal really, really worked very well. And that was, in my eyes, the really big difference between the two teams, especially in the first half. Just their ability to one-touch, pass it forward, get into a pocket of space, and then offer the shot on goal, which ultimately, in the case of Raheem Sterling and Marcus Rashford, were converted and had that 3-0 first half lead.
Stunning night for Sterling, of course, a Manchester City man who hadn't scored for 3 years for his country, a double in that first half, and Rashford, after missing all those chances against Croatia in the previous round against Croatia, where they drew 0-0 in front of no one, he scored as well. So it was a good night for England, not reliant on Harry Kane, though, as you said as well in the first hour. Massive plus, that.
Oh, it has to be a big plus. Obviously, with Marcus Rashford now being the one that is putting away some opportunity, not all his opportunities, some. Obviously, we saw what happened against Croatia in that 0-0. But he's at least getting into a spot that is very, very dangerous. And if he can somehow improve his finishing over the next few seasons, well, Kane and Rashford could ultimately be one of the very hottest prospects in world football leading into the Qatar World Cup in 2022.
I still have my doubts over England, though. This was an enormous win, a very impressive win. But it just again, I know football's not won on paper, because if this game was won on paper, well, the talented midfield, particularly of Spain, should have just dominated this match. It was Saul Busquets and Thiago Alcantara against Barkley, Dier and Winks. Doesn't make much sense. Mm. But in the end, again, they did have all the ball, Spain, but England just too good and clinical in that first half particularly. But I still have my doubts, because in terms of their personnel, yes, I like what they have up top. I like their attacking weapons, and there are many of them. But defensively, Pickford, great, but had a moment which almost cost his side dearly. We'll get to that shortly. But defensively and in midfield, I just don't see that as a long-term strength of theirs. And unless they start to bring out some new talent, and they had one in Sancho on the bench, which they didn't use over the two games. But I just have my doubts still. I don't think that Barkley, Dier and Winks, for example, who played this morning, I don't think they're capable of leading England to international silverware.
But I do. You have to give them some sort of credit.
I give them credit. I just don't think they're good enough to dominate football as Spain have done, as Germany have done in recent years.
No, I can't say it now, but you can only work with what you've got on the pitch.
Yeah, and I just don't think it's good enough.
Well, it might not be good enough to you, but ultimately, if they're getting the results, well, then you
have to... They got a result. This is the thing. They got a result.
But they also got a result against Croatia in Croatia. They've gotten a result in Spain against Spain. Mm. What more do they need to do? You have to start to couple all these things up. They've made a semi-final of a World Cup and ultimately finished fourth. So there are positive signs going forward.
They are. They're very positive. And again, I think where England are at is sensational. But I'm talking about being the best. Do they believe this generation of players can win it all? Because their golden generation failed to do so, and they were a star-studded outfit.
And this team has almost, if not gone further.
That's right.
Than what they did with
exactly.
that golden generation.
So it proves that football is certainly not won based on who you have on paper. So certainly believe that there is something there to work with, no doubt. And Barkley, Dier and Winks, solid performance against the more talented Saul, Busquets and Thiago. But in the end, is this team going to be able to go all the way in a World Cup, go all the way in a European Championships? I'm sure that they'd be satisfied with regular semi-final appearances at the World Cup. That will go down in history. But do England want to be better than that? I'm sure they do. Is this team good enough to do that and surpass what they achieved in Russia? For me, I'm not sold on it just yet, but that may not be the end game. The end game may be continual quarters and semis at international tournaments, and that I think they can do. Can they go all the way, though?
Well, that's going to be the biggest question. That's going to be the $64 billion question, ultimately. The only answer you will get to that is, will we see them, firstly, at Euro 2020 make the final? Mm. Will we see them in Qatar make the grand final there? Will we see them in Canada, US, Mexico in 2020? 26, make the final? That's the only time we'll ever get these answers. Yep. Sure, the trajectory seems to be as if they could get there. They need to probably unearth some more depth is probably where it is. But it's good to see at least Joe Gomez getting a start alongside Harry Maguire, because you would say John Stones is going to be the preferred centre-back pairing to Maguire. It's good to see Ben Chilwell there, because Trent Alexander-Arnold is going to be the one that would be seen at left-back. It's good to see Trippier, because Kyle Walker would be the other one that would probably be contending there at right-back. So there are these positive signs, especially defensively. Yes, you might look at me with a bit of a smirk and say, well, hang on, does any of those eight players scare you at international level to lead the three lones all the way? Well, probably no. But they work well as a team, and you need a team ethos and ethic and mentality to get you through to your quarterfinals, your semifinals, and of course, your big time dances, the finals.
Well, there you go. That's wrapped up well. I do believe that England have what it takes to be consistent performers at international tournament level. Whether or not a midfield of Barkley, Dyer and Winks is good enough to take them forward, we'll see. But defeating Spain is certainly a very good start, not taking anything away from that at all. So a historic night for England in the end. As I said, all of those incredible statistics, Sterling ending that goal drought, but the big one, of course, Spain losing against England for the first time since 1987. Well done to England, 3-2, they win. And this group now well and truly alive, of course. Croatia bottom, but still alive. Croatia can win both games, despite not having scored a single goal, and can go through.
They will.
Croatia win the last two games, they go through. But conversely, of course, Spain and England, they can still go through as well. And England and Croatia can also still be relegated. I love this competition, the UEFA Nations League. This is Group 4 of League A. The other League A fixture overnight, Iceland-Switzerland. Iceland 1, Switzerland 2. Iceland, the second League A team, relegated, joining Poland. And it was unfortunate because they had chances in the first half. Switzerland defeating them 6-0 last time out last month. But Seferovic and Lang with goals early in the second half, and that was that, despite Finn Bogason's late stunner. Check it out if you haven't. Sigurdsson had some good chances late on. Iceland could have actually won the game coming from the two goals behind, but in the end it finishes 1-2. Iceland gone. Switzerland to battle it out with Belgium for that top spot.
Who's your tip to make it through?
Belgium will go through.
Based on?
Well, Belgium will just beat Switzerland.
They belted them.
They'll beat them again. Belgium will beat them again. And they play the return in Switzerland, and Switzerland could win that. I just feel that Belgium will take care of them. Belgium are playing a level of football at the moment, which I said, unparalleled. They're playing a really strong brand of football, bringing the best out of what they've got, and their stars everywhere. And I like where they're headed.
Even without Thierry Henry on the sidelines as an assistant coach?
Even without Thierry on the sidelines. There again, though, some big runs. I said earlier in the show, but some big, big unbeaten runs have come to an end. And we know that Belgium are on this stunning run. I think it's 28 now out of 30 that they're unbeaten under Martinez. They're playing sensational football. Look, Switzerland, maybe they could take a draw in the return game, but I just think the class of Belgium will prevail. And again, they did defeat Switzerland. What, they beat them 2-1? Okay, intriguing. If Switzerland beat them 1-0, Switzerland have the better head-to-head record due to more away goals. It will be a nice last game. But then again, Belgium still have to beat Iceland. There's a lot to play for. But I think Belgium will just edge it out here, in Switzerland's stunning form at international level really competitively continues, because it was a solid World Cup. It was a great lead into the World Cup. 9 wins from 10 in their group. They're playing good football, really, really nice football. And they were, of course, one of the teams that suffered at the hands of the Swedish giants in the World Cup. They were eliminated there by 1-0. So I will back Switzerland to push Belgium, but I think Belgium just too strong. The story, though, for Iceland, that's it. They go down to League B. Now they can sort of rebuild and start again, I feel, when this resumes in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, you'd think that all of a sudden they might be able to unearth a couple more players that play in Europe in a bit more regular time and a bit more sort of cohesion when they go forward. And so they can organise themselves a little bit better, especially in attack. That 4-4-1-1 that they seem to employ under Henrik Hamrahn, yes, it's worked to some extent, but ultimately they've been found out pretty much since the World Cup. And unfortunately, you've got to go to the well a little bit before you can get back up. And this is what will have to happen to Iceland a little bit.
Yeah, that is that for Iceland. They are relegated. Elsewhere, results overnight. League B, Bosnia 2, Northern Ireland 0. Edin Džeko with a double, his 300th career goal in the process. League C, Estonia 3, Hungary 3. Disappointing for Hungary, who we both thought would win this group. But it's Finland who will win it.
4 from 4, 12 points out of 12, 5 goals scored, 0 conceded. Finland defeat Greece by 2 goals to nil.
And one Scandinavian team goes down, whilst another one goes right back up.
That's it. And in League D, Belarus 0, Moldova 0, Luxembourg 3, San Marino 0. Luxembourg, the surprise leaders of this group, and they take on Belarus in the next game, where the winner will all but secure qualification through to League C. It's a great tournament. Ticks everywhere. I know I say this every time, Rick, but it's because there were so many doubts around it. There have been so many questionable decisions made. Absolutely, you were.
I doubt it.
But there were many, and this has been the best implementation of anything I've seen UEFA do for many years now, whether it be rules, whether it be new competitions, new ideas. This is as good as there has been. Almost as good, Rick, as us this weekend, the Carlton Italian Festo on Lygon Street. Looking forward to that. A great decision to bring us on board. Really looking forward to that. If you are in Melbourne, join us this Sunday, October the 21st, Rick, 2 till 4pm, Australian Eastern Daylight Time, or just 2pm. If you're in Melbourne, you know the time. Get down and say hello. We are off to a break. You will hear what's to come at that Lygon Street Festa this weekend shortly. So listen, join us, 2 o'clock this Sunday. More on that to come, and plenty more. We'll look ahead to the UEFA Nations League fixtures tomorrow morning, including that heavyweight blockbuster match between France and Germany. Stay tuned. This is Afternoons right here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Hey there, welcome back. This is Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio. We do hope you are enjoying the program. Lots still to discuss. Of course, we will preview what's to come tomorrow morning in the UEFA Nations League and discuss, of course, some big transfer rumours that we touched on in the first hour. Club action set to resume this weekend. We're very, very excited about that, Rick, aren't we? Can't wait for all that action to come back. Champions League next week as well. So lots to get through.
Big week ahead.
Huge. Huge week ahead. But again, we have to pay respects where respect is due, Rick. Last night in the UEFA Nations League, it was a phenomenal win by the Three Lions. England winning 3-2 in Seville against Spain.
Correct.
Record-breaking for many reasons that we touched on. Just have a listen to some of the action from it. Of course, England led by 3 at the break. It finished 3-2, but what a night for Gareth Southgate and England as they run out 3-2 winners in Spain.
Good precision on his clearance, and Kane helped it on to Rashford, and Rashford found Raheem Sterling, who lashes England in front. There at last is his England goal, and what a goal! 3 years in the waiting.
And Kane has kept the ball, and he spotted Rashford.
2-0 England! Well, what about this? Marcus Rashford on target, and England in a place they could not have dreamed they would be. And set for Ross Barkley, and scooped over the top for Harry Kane. Raheem Sterling, 3-0 England.
Spanish corner,
and an immediate contribution from Paco Alcacer, who is full of goals, just full of goals right now. Asensio, Ceballos, Ramos, 3-2, 97 minutes.
Yes, 97 minutes and too late. We discussed in the first hour, Rick, how funny it is that in these games where there is a historic result on the line very close, it always feels as if there is just so much stoppage time. This one, there were 7 minutes of stoppage time, Ramos scoring there right at the end. But, yeah, it felt like we had a comment come through in the Facebook Live suggesting that I thought there'd be another 10 minutes of stoppage time to give Spain plenty of time to score. But, again, a famous night for England.
No, it is absolutely. Congratulations there to the Three Lions. You're right. There does feel whenever these sort of epic type encounters and maybe there's a bit more of a result on the line that could favour both teams rather than one over the other, you always start to count, is it the extra minute, is it two, is it three, and in this case, 7.
Well, it goes for a very, very long time for sure.
But nonetheless, if we sort of look at, if we take any positive out of it for Spain, I think you have to look at that Real Madrid finally might have someone who can actually score a goal, and that is in Sergio Ramos, their defender. He's already been scoring for them, and we know that they haven't scored in, what, 4 of their last matches in all competitions. He's now scored 2 in 4 days. Maybe the run against Levante might end this weekend.
Well, they would hope so. They would hope that some of their stars are back fit and firing and ready to go. But more to come on Real Madrid and all things La Liga later on in the week. A huge match tomorrow morning in the UEFA Nations League. France, Germany. What a game this will be. Met last month in Germany, 0-0. not a bad result for both, particularly Germany, who haven't been playing great football. But now Germany go to France absolutely needing a result. And, well, really, they need a win. They need a win because they lost 3-0 to the Dutch 3 days ago, not long ago at all. Can they turn this around? They were dismantled by the Dutch. To be fair, they conceded 2 in the last 5 minutes. But Netherlands deserved the win. All of a sudden, they take on France. They lose this match. They're all but relegated.
It's so, so weird saying that Germany could be relegated from Ligue 1 of the UEFA Nations League. Their result, or this result, is a must win for them.
Must.
I think it's always come down to that. And Yogi Löw, he's sort of been hinting throughout his press conferences that he's going to mix it up a little bit because he has gone with the old staunch Warriors, but unfortunately they haven't delivered. However, he is going to back Manuel Neuer to the hill, and their captain, and he will be the one that he's starting. But it'd be interesting to see who he mixes it up with in the rest of the team. I wonder who's going to partner Joshua Kimmich in the centre of midfield. I'm really keen to see who he goes with up top because he tried Marc Uth, and unfortunately for him, he didn't score. Who's going to partner Turbo Tim Werner? Will it be someone like Serge Gnabry? Will Thomas Muller get some game time? Will he even be used at all in this one, considering what his form's been like over the last, 4 months at national team level? So there's plenty of questions there for me. Will Nicolas Schuhl be given the reins of the defence ahead of either Hummels or Boateng? I know I've just asked about 6 questions there in the last minute, but I think
that's where we're at, though.
But that's exactly where we're at with Germany. There's plenty of questions and doubts in this lineup. We know their depth. It's whether Yogi Löw trusts them enough to get a huge result that they need to in such a do-or-die clash.
I don't know if they can. I really don't know if they can. Their recent form on the road, so their last 4 matches outside of Germany have not produced too many goals. That's been a massive issue, and obviously no real results going their way either, which isn't great. It isn't great for them. Look, over the course of the World Cup, they, of course, again, outside of Germany, they won the one game. They defeated Sweden. They didn't score in the other couple. They've been poor, again, as I said, outside of Germany, very poor. In friendlies, in competitions, they just have not got it together. 6 or 7, they've actually not won away outside of Germany. So I don't think they'll win, with the exception of that Sweden match, of course. So just that one. One player who, for me, must start is Sané. Leroy Sané is the one who I think he didn't start against the Dutch. He came on for Müller just short of the hour mark. Draxler as well, another option there. You've asked so many questions, but it's because there are so many issues. Boateng is out. He's been injured. He's been ruled out. Even Neuer in goal. There, questions need to be asked everywhere. Neuer will play, but I would certainly start Sané. I think the pace that Sané offers is critical against arguably the quickest international attack in the planet that the French possess. And I think that Sané going the other way could put a bit of pressure on. I do like Emre Can, Toni Kroos, as they started together in a slightly more advanced role. Timo Werner, I wouldn't start. I'd like to see Draxler involved. I'd like to see Sané involved. And I'd like to see the Germans go at France playing their own style. Pace, flair, attack. And I feel that's the only way that Germany can get something out of it. Germany haven't been scoring. So they need weapons up top. Whether you start Müller up top as opposed to in a wide position as he started, I'm not sure. I think Müller still has a role to play, but I certainly pin my hopes in this one on Leroy Sané.
Well, I think you have to. On the back of what happened to him not being included in the World Cup squad, on the back of how his start has been at Manchester City this season, you'd almost say, well, he's probably their best player, or at least their most in-form player, considering what he has done this season in terms of an advanced position. So, yeah, if you are Yogi Löw, you'd probably have to start Sané. It's whether you trust the likes of, say, Marco Reus, whether you trust Julian Draxler, whether you trust even Julian Brandt to sort of partner Sané, the Manchester City winger, up top, maybe even Turbo Tim. The combinations, all the players are there. They've all got the hunger. It's who can ultimately lead Die Mannschaft to score a goal and a famous victory in France.
I don't think they can win. I said it yesterday about England. I really don't think that they can beat this French side. The French were underwhelming in the friendly against Iceland, sure, but this is a different game. And I think that France will be too strong. it's another opportunity for the Les Bleus side to put on a show in front of their home fans.
But the one weakness that we've sort of touched on throughout the World Cup that France do have is these sort of fullback type positions, whether it be a Sidibe, whether it be a Pavard, whether it be a Lucas Hernandez. It doesn't matter who it is that ultimately... Sorry, Theo Hernandez, not Lucas, my apologies. It doesn't matter who it is, you would think that the likes of Sane and Royce, maybe even Draxler, should have enough speed to get in behind them and put a ball into the box. Mm. It's whether ultimately that ball in the box is finished off by somebody up top, that target man. I don't know who it's going to be for Germany, but somebody somehow needs to find the back of the net from those positions.
Well, it will be a fascinating watch. There's no doubt about it. Of course, that match tomorrow, if you are in Australia, kicking off live 5:45 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, live on Optus Sport. A massive match, a prediction, Rick, France against Germany.
1-0 France.
1-0.
Very close. I don't think there's going to be many goals. I think Germany's defence will be very tough to break down, especially after what happened against the Netherlands. Mm. France's attack, I think, is now going to be Mbappe-driven. Mm-hmm. This is on the back of, obviously, what happened with Iceland and his two goals that he scored. So I think very, very tough, very, very close. 1-0 to France for me.
2-0 for me. They'll take care of them. And Germany will all but be relegated from this group. League B, Ireland and Wales.
No Gareth Bale.
Again, no Bale.
And he will be playing for Real Madrid this weekend.
Pleasing for Real Madrid. If you miss the reports on this, we said last week that Gareth Bale has historically reportedly had issues with every Real manager he's ever had because he always wants to play for his national team, understandably so, but at the same time, he's always injured. This time around, they've got the better of him. He's not playing. Big loss.
Big loss. No, it is. And considering that, you know, the attack is mainly driven by the Real Madrid man, it's going to be interesting to see how the likes of, is it Embolo, I think his name is, or Embiid, he's going to be the one to obviously be the one to possibly even score the goals. I mean, they've got a few options there, Wales under Ryan Giggs, but I just don't know if they can actually get the goal. Sam Vokes was the one who scored the goal against Spain in the friendly a couple of days ago. He'll obviously be helping or be wanting to lead the line again and possibly getting another one, but no, I can't see Wales at the moment getting the result without Gareth Bale.
Now, we've focused a lot when we talk about the UEFA Nations League and its relation with the Euros on League A. We've discussed a lot how if you win your group in League A and you finish second, you avoid relegation, you'll be seeded. Do you know how important this match is for these two nations who will consider themselves solid pot two sides? Because pot two, pot three is on the line here. Now, at the moment, the way things stand, Wales beat Ireland 4-1 in the reverse. But because Wales lost to Denmark and Ireland were actually able to pick up a draw with Denmark, should Ireland win this, they go ahead of Wales with one game to play against the fancy Danes, who will obviously play both sides in the latter stages of this competition. Technically here, a pot two place is on offer, and that could mean direct entry to the European Championships because we know that in the 10 groups for qualification for that tournament, the top two go straight through. Mm. The other four will be decided throughout this format here, which is a discussion for another day. Pot two, pot three, lot to play for here. A great deal because one of these two nations will be a pot three side come the draw.
Is this another one of your England-Belgium Group H or Group G predictions from the World Cup where it's better to lose...
Look after each other.
...and look after yourself and then hopefully get through a little bit further?
Look, there are interesting elements, but one thing is for sure, whoever gets relegated from this group won't be a pot two side.
Mm.
That could work against you. So in that case, you simply must win. However, there will also be other avenues through this competition which aren't too clear at the moment where you may be better off being lower. Regardless of that, at the moment, these two sides simply must win this game. This is a big game for that point because keep in mind that two of the nations in League A, we discussed earlier, it could be Germany, it could be Croatia, they'll be a pot two side. So you desperately want to avoid being drawn into a group with two very strong nations as a pot three outfit, knowing then your chances of Euro 2020 qualification will be shattered. Because at the moment, the way that Ireland and Wales are playing, I couldn't see them taking care of two solid European nations. And they're getting their way through this group. This is the most talked about group in the whole Nations League because of the Danish situation that was at the start of the tournament. Wales and Ireland, obviously, very close countries, neighbouring nations there in the United Kingdom, all to play for. Big match. I think Wales, without Bale, they will suffer as a result, but I think this ends all square.
Yeah, I can see something like that. Maybe a one or maybe a couple of plucky goals. That
1-1 is my prediction.
Ultimately sees a all-squared result.
Ukraine, Czech Republic, the other game in League B. And keep in mind as well, Ireland and Wales can both still be promoted.
They can.
We're just saying that the Danes, obviously, with the game in hand after this, they'll be in the box seat, regardless, all to play for. Ukraine and the Czech Republic, Ukraine flying. 1-1 with Italy midweek, a rare draw for them. They haven't had much success against the Italians. However, the Czech Republic here, they simply must win. Otherwise, Ukraine go through. Ukraine get a point in this match and Ukraine will be going through.
I'd say Ukraine should go through from that group and how it's all positioned.
They should regardless, but mathematically they'll be secure.
And when you also factor in Ukraine's unbeaten run, what is it, 7-8 matches or whatever it was under Andrei Shevchenko, their coach, you would think that the blue and yellows should do enough. A result in their favour is what I'm tipping here. Maybe even a 2-1 type win. Unfortunately for the Czech Republic, they just might be the team that sort of slips down and goes down into the next group.
Unbeaten in 8, Shevchenko's Ukraine, and highly fancied to get the win here. Would make it 3-3, and they will be through to League A. Elsewhere, League C, Norway, Bulgaria, Slovenia, Cyprus, and in League D, Kazakhstan, Andorra, Armenia, Macedonia, Gibraltar, Liechtenstein, Latvia, Georgia. Can Gibraltar do it, Rick?
Oh, very tough. 2-2 would be very, very tough. But
in search of a first ever home competitive win.
I'm going to say still no, unfortunately. But they will be riding on a very high crest of confidence. And I just still can't see them doing it, though, no.
I'll tell you what. If England can get the win against Spain, I understand that England are a lot more established than Gibraltar are. But if England can get the win against Spain and defy the odds there, and no one predicted that, although you did give them more of a hope than I did. Mm. But why can't Gibraltar beat Liechtenstein? Liechtenstein, they don't have many people in their country either, Rick. You're aware of this.
I am.
Do you know what the population is?
Under a million.
Liechtenstein population, I had no idea, so I'm not going to claim to be an expert here. I've just Googled it. But as of 2016, they had sub 38,000.
There you go.
I would have guessed that it was half a mil, 400,000. So the populations are quite similar. There's no reason why Gibraltar can't pull off a famous home win, their first ever home win in a competitive environment, and would be only their third ever win as well.
Oh, Liechtenstein did win 2-0 in the reverse fixture. Come on, Adrian, let's be a little bit more serious.
On the
here.
Road, that at their home.
Come on.
Well, Gibraltar just took care of Armenia. Armenia have a population 100 times the size of Gibraltar, they which do. We touched on. So they Gibraltar do. Can certainly win this. They've met once. They've met twice before, 2-0, as you said, and a friendly in 2016, 0-0, Rick.
Oh, I'm still not giving any chance to Gibraltar here, unfortunately. I might have to eat my words tomorrow and have a big old chunk of humble pie, but no, I still think that Liechtenstein should get the result here.
All right, I will be taking a photo and uploading that to all forms of social media of you we and might your have humble
to,
pie.
Might have to buy that pie, to be honest, tomorrow.
We will. We'll keep a close eye on that. Gibraltar take on Liechtenstein there. Macedonia favoured to win that group, and will confirm that if they defeat Armenia in Armenia, so on the road, and they'll be desperate to bounce back from that shock loss. But that to come, we'll review all those matches tomorrow here at the same time on Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio. We are off to our final break for the day. Again, another reminder, Lygon Street this weekend, the Carlton Italian Festival. We will be there 2 p.m. till 4 p.m. If you're with us in Melbourne, come down and say hello. But do stay tuned, wrapping up the show very shortly. You are, of course, listening to Afternoons right here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome back for the final time today. This is Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio. We are your voice of football in Australia and around the world. There is UEFA Nations League action tomorrow morning, of course. If you're with us in Australia, that all available live and exclusive on Optus Sport. Check that out. France, Germany, the pick of the matches. Do not miss it. 5:45 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. Transfer news, Rick, to wrap up the show, some of which we touched on in the first hour. But a quick one, let's go back to Usain Bolt, that big story there. So offered a 2-year deal by Valletta in the Maltese Premier League. Has been training with Central Coast Mariners. Has played 2 exhibition matches with the Central Coast Mariners in Australia. Is he any chance of staying here in Australia, or is he headed to Europe? Is it better suited to him where he's currently at?
Well, it ultimately just depends.
Where is he currently at?
Well, this is the other thing. I think that's 3 questions I think we need to answer. I personally don't think he's ready as a footballer. I mean, he did score against MacArthur on the weekend, but realistically, this isn't an A-League standard team. So that's the first thing that needs to be established. So Usain Bolt, he does have a lot of work to get where he thinks he can get to. So I don't think the road is going to be a slow one. It's going to be a very hard slog. If all of a sudden he does get this offer from Valletta, which is what people are suggesting out there in social media land, I just don't think he will even be ready for the Maltese League. Sure, he gets his playing time, he gets his playing contract, and therefore he is then able to develop as the footballer. But I think if he is already, you know, settled and based in Australia, he should probably do the hard yards here in Australia and hopefully really earn on his own a contract at the Central Coast Mariners.
Do you think the Maltese Premier League is at a higher standard than what's on offer here in Australia?
I don't know what the Maltese Premier League is offering in terms of the standard. I've never really sort of enveloped myself in it, unfortunately. But look, if the offer is true and he does move there, well done to him. Learn and develop. But if the offer is here to stay in Australia and develop your craft here, we'll develop it here.
Okay. There you go.
I honestly can't see Usain Bolt being the difference between Valletta qualifying for, say, a third round qualifying group of the Champions League and then making the group stage of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes absolute sense.
He's not going to be the difference maker. He might put a few bums on the seats, but that's all he will do.
But again, that angle there, doesn't that make it appealing for an Australian club? Because at the moment, the Central Coast Mariners have been front page of every publication in world football.
That would never
have been the case.
No, you are right. But you picked your players based on their talents, not their marketability.
Yeah, that is true. But again, we're talking...
So you need to put your professional development as an individual and as a sportsman ahead of the ability of them to be able to sell, you know, mobile phone contracts and whatever else our great partners at Optus do.
Yeah, that's true. But we are talking about lower level football here, with all due respect. The Maltese Premier League will benefit from Usain Bolt playing football in Malta. The Maltese economy could benefit from Usain Bolt playing football there. It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. I'm not saying it's not a big deal, but I'm saying if you look at it in terms of only, you know, his professional ability, which is what you have to first and foremost before you look at it, him as a brand. Well, yeah, he's not quite up to it at all as an actual footballer.
All right, well, if you'd follow the Maltese Premier League closely, Rick, you know that Valletta are currently third, 4 wins from 6, 4 straight wins in their last 4 games, playing some good football. And Usain Bolt may be the difference between them and a piece of silverware in Malta this season. Some of the other stories to wrap up the day. Barcelona on the hunt for a defender, Rick, and Matthijs de Ligt, the Ajax captain, 19 years of age, is the one. They're saying he's priority number one, and they need him.
As he should be, considering that, you know, the amount of injuries to, obviously, Samuel Umtiti. Clement Lenglet obviously had that red card suspension against Girona. Gerard Pique, well, you know, this isn't the old Gerard Pique of yesteryear, unfortunately. He's starting to make a few more rash challenges. He's starting to get a few more yellow cards, and you know, he's starting to look a little bit beyond it in my eyes. He does have a long way to go. Umtiti, as I sort of suggested in the first hour, that knee injury is a little bit more severe than first anticipated. And unless Valverde decides to go to that three-man defence, which he won't, you have to bring in somebody to complement and be able to even maybe take over from the agent PK. And I think Matthijs de Ligt might be that right individual for Barcelona. And you also have to factor in, he's doing incredibly well, even at national team level, and he does have Virgil van Dijk helping him to develop. So he does have a lot of strong mentors around him who might be even telling him, you know what, the Barcelona move, yeah, it might be a little bit unexpected, but it's probably the right one for your career going forward.
Yeah, that's right. The opportunity is there at the moment to play a key role, not just learn on the job, but also play a key role in this Barcelona team going forward under the tutelage of so many superstars there at that proud club. Just a few others before we wrap up the show. Cengiz Under, linked to Bayern Munich, reports in Germany saying that they're monitoring him, of course, with the news that, of course, Robin Ribery will move on. They're going to need some new wingers going forward. Cengiz Under of Roma, one who's being touted. He could have something to offer at that club. He really could. So a young prospect, still nowhere near his full potential, in my opinion, but could be an important acquisition for them.
Imagine if you get the Turkish international playing, say, maybe 65, 70 minutes. If Robben is offered another one-year deal on the back of what he does this season, you get Robben 20 minutes or something like that. It's a great little combination to have on the right wing.
Yeah, for sure, but certainly an area that they will need to resolve now. The number 9 area as well, another one. Romelu Lukaku linked away from Manchester United. I said maybe that would be a worthy addition for the Bavarians there. Another number nine, Edin Džeko. He's been questioned about his close move to the Premier League, or return to the Premier League in January. Didn't materialise. He's been asked about a move to the Premier League and said, look, it may be too late, but you never know. So maybe Džeko still could move around. There are a few number nines who could be on the move. Lewandowski, of course, another one. Lukaku, as we said, Edin Džeko here. And a number of wingers as well in the case of Cengiz Under. And the final one in the case of another future number nine, he's a young number nine, still a teenager, Moise Kean for Juventus, did become the first ever player born in the 2000s to score for the Italian under-21 side overnight, just in addition to having become the first in the 2000s to score in the Serie A and the UEFA Champions League. So when we talk about number nines to come, there is a young prospect indeed. But that's it for today. Again, a reminder, this Sunday, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m, Lygon Street, we will be the Carlton Italian Festa. More of that to come across the platform in coming days. But that is all for today. Join us tomorrow at the same time to recap the final day of UEFA Nations League action from this international break. For now, though, from myself, Adriano Del Monte, and Rick D'Andrea, this has been Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your voice of football here in Australia and right around the world. Until next time, it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio, with Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea.